On this episode of the iFilmmaker podcast, we're talking about coordinating chaos and telling better stories. Welcome back to the iFilmmaker podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez, and today we have a great episode. I feel like I say that every single episode, but no, today we do have a really good episode. My friend Emily Chenery has joined us on the episode, and I've been trying to get her on for a long time. So Emily is basically the chaos organizer, if you will. She's an awesome, awesome producer over at Loud and Live. She's basically the one that I work with all the time whenever I do these CrossFit jobs or events, whether it's the CrossFit Games or Wadapalooza, Granite Games. She is basically the brains behind all the chaos, all that organized chaos that basically takes place at all these events. So I was able to bring her on and basically share with us her process and how she kind of gets everything organized, because I think it's a great, you know, tool to have some of these tips and tricks that she does and kinds of how she maneuvers these waters of getting 20 plus people and organizing them all to fit one narrative, one story that this organization is trying to tell. And it's awesome. She shared some amazing stories, and some of her just talents just involve putting all this stuff together. So we had a great conversation, and unfortunately this one was not live just because of the scheduling, and we weren't able to coordinate the live process. I had to record it with a different kind of software remotely, so we could not make this one live. However, We did have a very, very long conversation, and she shared just a lot of awesome, awesome insight. But before we get to that episode, I just want to remind you guys that this episode is sponsored by The Music Bed. Find a perfect song for your films with a highly curated roster featuring hundreds of artists, bands, and composers. As an iFilmmaker listener, you get your first month of subscription for free or 20% off a single song purchase. Just enter the promo code iFilmmaker when you check out. So with all that out of the way, let's go ahead and get into our conversation with Emily Chenery, producer extraordinaire over at Loud and Live. So I guess let's go ahead and start with your background, how you started in doing what you're doing today. What did you study? I know you went to UF. You got your degree there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. First of all, thanks so much for having me on. Super excited to be here. But my background and kind of how I got started in all of this was, funny enough, in Arkansas. I went to school at University of Central Arkansas and got a bachelor's degree in public relations and ended up moving to Florida. I really wanted to work in sports, and Arkansas doesn't have a whole lot of professional sports teams, which is where I thought I was going to end up. And so ended up at University of Florida, got my master's degree in sport management. Worked at the University of Florida with both the journalism and the sports side of things for 3.5 years. Ended up leaving and running my own company called Red Leaf Productions, where I had a multitude of different clients from ESPN to CrossFit Games. My sister has a YouTube channel with just under 1 million followers. And so kind of ran the gamut as far as doing some video, some social, some social strategy and brand management, and just kind of all over the place. So that led me to where I am now with Loud and Live Sports. And so now I work with 5 different event properties as the media director and working on anything that it takes to get the job done as far as photo, video, graphic design, social media, etc. So that's a quick glance.
That basically brings us to where we are today. You do a lot, and not only a lot, I think, and I'm not just saying this, I think you do it very well. And the reason why I say that is because, I mean, I've seen how elaborate your emails are whenever we're about to start a whole new project, whether it's Bimini or the shooting the online qualifiers or whatnot. You're sending out these mass emails with just like essays of just instructions for everyone. And I'm reading it somewhat, and I'm like, I'm thinking like, my God, there's so much information. Like, you know, it took a lot of time, I guess, to get all that information, but then to write it down in a way that, you know, makes sense for everyone and everyone knows exactly what their duties are. This is like, these are like projects of like just 20 people. It's just a lot of people involved. And how do you start organizing your thoughts or just organizing the chaos, what I call like the chaos? Because it's kind of like that. It feels like it's just organized chaos. Everything's happened. It feels chaotic, but it's still organized at the same time. And that's basically your doing. How do you start kind of piecing this thing together? Like any project, like what's your method? I don't know.
No, it's a great question. So really, storytelling for me starts way before the editing process or the camera starts rolling even. The storytelling really begins when you're starting to organize all of that information. So in a super down-to-earth sense, a lot of it for me starts with Google Sheets. But it's very much a taking of a lot of information and then simplifying it down into consumable pieces. So just like we talked about a little bit earlier, when we're working as a director and like you said, herding cats and herding the chaos and just bringing it all together so that things run smoothly, sometimes you're leaning more into a production manager role. Sometimes you're leaning into a little bit more of your artistic side to help with the vision. Sometimes you lean a little bit more into your technical side to be able to articulate what the ISO should be, the shutter speed, what the vision is, how we're looking at things. And so having the skill set to be able to jump back and forth from all of those things is something that I've been working on for over 10 years. I think that it's really important to be a good leader, to be able to be in the trenches of all of those different areas so that you intimately understand what it takes from concept to completion with your video projects, the same graphic design project, the same with a website, a social strategy, and bringing those shoots to life. So I think that we're looking at more of a one man band style when it's coming to bringing these together. You're not always going to have the pieces that you want in every area. Just like you'd probably love to have an audio technician and a lighting guru and all those things that you'd love to have on a shoot to be make the point you have to focus on a little bit easier, but it's 2019. It's just not the case anymore. So finding a way to kind of organize all of that chaos is something that I have worked on a whole bunch of understanding that throughout the years. The example that I want to give is when you're looking for, when you're doing an interview and you have to, for example, an interview comes to mind. I did an interview with a professor at the University of Florida on oxygen and his study of oxygen. I know nothing about the study of oxygen and air and all of these other minute details that he was focusing on. And I sat down and did a 20-minute interview with him.
Wow.
And then I had to condense that into a 2-minute video, edited video, that you and I would understand having never studied oxygen before and make it consumable. And so it's a really similar idea when we start looking at putting together these production schedules and making sure that all of the pieces and all of the players are jiving together. We've got video, we've got a photo team, we have the actual talent, we have the programmers who are putting together the workouts. You know, we have teams that are providing craft services, making sure that the equipment's getting from one place to another. And so it's definitely bigger than me. It definitely takes a whole team to do all of that, but you're right. It's really just taking the chaos and then putting it into consumable pieces for the general population to pick up on. And you hope everybody reads it, right? It's a lot.
It is a lot of information. And not only that, it's you're highlighting key points, you're underlining things that you want them to notice. You're putting hyperlinks. It's quite intricate in in its formation. And no, that's super appreciative because it definitely helps everybody you know, just work better. I think that it's super, super helpful. And you always refer back to that when it comes to that. And not only in the beginning, but at the end of every day that we shoot, at the end of the day, you're sending out a pretty equally as elaborate email kind of summarizing everything that happened and what can be expected on the next day. And it's pretty good stuff. Good stuff. So when you're given a project, do you start with the end result? Like, the, you know, obviously you have to know what the goal is for you to know how to kind of approach that. What are some of the first aspects that you kind of consider with regards to that? So for example, you know, let's take the online qualifiers, right? What was the end goal and what did you start piecing together? Like as part of, I guess, your role in this, who were the first people that you had to call, you know, to kind of make sure that they're available, et cetera?
No, that's a great question. So just for context, the online qualifiers are online workouts that we host once a year where we have tens of thousands of athletes participate digitally. So we're releasing video files that people are completing the workouts literally around the world, you know, from Alaska to Hawaii, but Australia and everywhere in between. And so these are some of the most important digital pieces and digital assets that we'll put together all year. And we want to make sure that it matches the brand, obviously. So you brought up a point of kind of identifying what the end product looks like. Definitely that's a piece that we consider. For me specifically, I started the skeleton team because there's certain roles that we simply cannot have a shoot or an event or a production without videographers, photographers, social media managers, and then our athletes. So it's really identifying our budgets and then the people that we have in those places, and then starting to get the communication out to those people to line them up and identify them. And once we have that thin crew of staff, then you start adding in the color. So I like to think of it as black and white lines, and then move into coloring the picture in with full color.
Mm. Sounds colorful.
You need the foundation, you need the structure, or you can't, or the colors go in all different directions and they don't have any boundaries. So
yeah, definitely. It makes sense. So I assume obviously they give you an overall budget for everything. How hard is that sometimes? And I know you and I have had conversations about this before, but how hard is that, you know, basically trying to work with a budget that, you know, sometimes it's usable, sometimes it's not. Where does most of the money go usually? Like, what do you consider as highly important, and what can you kind of be a little loose with? And I'm sure that obviously depends on the project itself.
Yeah, it definitely depends on the project. At the end of the day, it's always a challenge to try to find the way to accomplish the best. That's always our goal, right? Is to accomplish the best quality product and also make sure that we're spending responsibly. And so always a balance of that when you're looking at any project. And I think that that's the case no matter where you are, is identifying what the boundaries of anything are, really. Like we talked about with the support staff and the structure and the production. Like, I think you start there to be able to make that great product. And it's the same with the budget side of things. You start with what's available and what is identified to be allocated towards this project. And then you say, what can we do with that? Here's the boundary there, money-wise. What can we do to make the best product with the money that we have available? And kind of go from there. So it's very much, that's, I think, a game that you're going to play no matter where you work, is just balancing what all of those different boundaries are. And I think it's a really important tool set to have, or tool to have in your toolbox, to be able to work with and speak the languages of the different people that are invested in a project, whether it's your video team, your photo team, or if it's the people you're reporting to, or maybe just your coworkers, and getting them to try to have a better understanding of what's going on so that they can also jump in and help you accomplish your goal. I think in my experience, I've never found people that I work with to be against helping. They just want to understand where we're going and how to get there. So the more clear that you can be to explain that and to bring people in to the team and feel like they're a part of that energy that's moving forward, then you're going to have a lot more help to get there in the end, and a lot more people that are feeling satisfied that they were able to accomplish something at the end of the day, right? That they feel like they brought value to. And so that's, you know, honestly what we're looking at anytime we're building a project out is, I think you have to expect that things will always change. Things are always going to adjust. There will be fires, there will be things you didn't think of, or things that are not expected. And so going in, understanding and accepting that it's going to change, at least for me, makes it a little bit easier to go with the flow. But I think going in at least with a plan and then having to adjust it is setting yourself up for success more so than going in and saying, like, we'll just fly by the seat of our pants and see what happens and just go with the flow, because that generally, in my experience, brings up more questions and chaos and confusion than it does with providing these detailed emails that we're kind of going through. And I think I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I think it's, as far as the emails you mentioned earlier of sending those out every night, those are including, like you said, information about what we did that day, what's coming up, where we're going to be, the weather, the nearest Starbucks location. And as far as the brands that we're going to be working with the athletes, to make sure that they're aware of that too and what to expect. I also try to do little things like bolding people's names or making it red or colorful, draw your attention in so that you start learning where to look for the information. And I think a big part that plays into that is consistency. If I send an email once at the beginning of a production week, and then I answer all of my text messages in between then and never send an email out again, I'm not teaching that whole, including our talent, including our staff, to go there for answers. I'm teaching them that they can then text me. So the goal is always to provide consistency with this as well, which is, yes, you can expect this to happen. You can expect it to have good information, and you can expect to be able to find your name. I want people to feel like they can rely on that information and that they can trust the information that's coming into them. Because like you said, it's chaos. It's a lot of really good energy that just needs to be directed.
That's awesome. And how many different, have you worked like this before? Is this the way that you're used to working with the different companies even before Loud and Live? What has been your experiences with, like, I guess, other bosses? And, you know, I'm sure you've had your share of different bosses that you've had to work with. What can people expect going into some sort of profession like this, where, you know, they're expected to do a lot with sometimes very little, interacting with your boss? What can they expect? And, you know, how can, you know, they make that as best as possible, like the best, you know, they can?
Yeah, I think the what I've seen be most successful for people is really taking the time to learn as much as you can. If you get to a point that you feel like you know everything, or you're the absolute end-all be-all expert in a field, that's a really dangerous place to be. So I think always continuing to learn. If you take social media, for example, it's constantly changing and evolving. And if you're not staying up to date on that, it's going to pass you by very quickly. So I think that first and foremost, going into any new position, just looking to find out as much as you can and keep learning. Spend 15 minutes in the morning when you first get there reading about what's coming in technology in this case. You know, that's something that I've seen be helpful. Be open to jumping in and doing things, even if you're scared and nervous and it makes you uncomfortable. That usually is a sign of growth. And you might come in as a videographer and end up having skills as a lighting technician, as a production manager. You may end up finding that you really like working in social media or marketing. And so I think all of just being open to learning a lot of different things, that was something that I picked up a lot at the University of Florida. And I worked with a lot of students there. And so At UF, actually, we had a production unit. We're a very small production unit on campus, but we worked with clients both inside and outside of campus. And my crew was typically students. And they were paid students. They were working with us, but they had very erratic schedules, right? Because they have class and that's important. But then also they're students and they haven't done this before and they're learning. And so not only are you teaching them, but you're also checking up to make sure that, you know, we don't have anything hanging off in the back of our shot that we maybe missed, or there's a tree coming up behind somebody's head, or the diffuser is... someone's arms are getting tired and the diffuser's falling in the shot. You know, there's a lot of things that you're kind of checking up on to make sure that they're learning, but you're also a quality product for the client that you're working with. And so juggling, and then I have my bosses and our clients had their own budgets, and it was kind of a juggling act that started really early that, you know, when I was hired as a producer, and that turned into editing and shooting and teaching and, you know, doing estimates and doing budgets and working with that on a much larger scale. And so I think that that's really where it started. And then looking at, you know, the students was one thing that I always told them was, you never know who's watching. And so you should always conduct yourself in a manner that your next boss could be there watching and paying attention and seeing how you're interacting with the world and just tying it all back together. You know, one of the things there that I've seen be really successful is a willingness to learn and a willingness to continue to dive into all those different aspects and see what else you know, can jump in on.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Gosh, you're giving us some good information here. I hope everyone's taking notes on this one. I'm sure, like, the way you work, again, it's organized chaos. So you have to find a way to put things together that would otherwise just be going insane with, you know, without that order. But I'm sure that there are some times where things just don't pan out, whether it's the weather, whether it's somebody that couldn't make it, whatever it is. How do you kind of handle situations like that? I mean, yeah, let's go ahead and start with that. Like, how do you handle situations that are not planned for? How do you try to maneuver those waters there?
Yeah, there's so many things that you can get down the bunny trail of what if this happens and what if this happens and what if this happens. And I think that really goes back to having a plan that you go into and then just kind of understanding that it will change and it will adjust, and accepting that early.
Right.
Not getting bent out of shape when somebody doesn't show up on time or the weather or whatever the case is, just kind of pivoting and adjusting. Typically, what I've found is that people are very understanding. If it's raining and lightning outside, we cannot go out on jet skis. I'm sorry, that's just what's going to happen. Like, most people are pretty on board with that.
That's a true example there.
They're not going to hold, I mean, they see what you're dealing with. So, you know, they're usually pretty easygoing with it. But definitely, like, Waza Weekend, I know, is one that you and I have worked on together, Wadapalooza.
Yes.
That always has its excitements and up and downs as far as weather is concerned. That's always an issue. And then just there's 45,000 people on site, and we have, you know, 2,000 athletes competing there. It's something that we are constantly juggling, that organized chaos of what if this happens, what if this happens, and having flashbacks.
Yeah, I know. It's been, I think I've been doing Walza now for like 5 years. It's 5 years now doing Walza. You've been with the Loudon Live for 3 years?
I've been here for almost coming up on 2 years. Okay. But I actually started working for the CrossFit Games in 2014.
Okay.
And then when I was working with Red Leaf Productions, yeah, I was also working with the Granite Games. Yeah. So I have a pretty extensive background in the CrossFit specific world.
Yeah, that's where you and I first met. It was at the Granite Games, and yeah, that was the first time we ever worked together.
Yeah, I think we have to thank Jonathan for us together.
Yeah, Mayfield was the one that brought me on that one. also. Yeah, Mayfield was a lot of fun to work with. I still got to get him on the podcast. He's been a hard one to get going. Both of us trying to get our schedules.
He's traveling the world. He's awesome.
You on this podcast is impossible. No, not because of you. It's just our schedules.
Our schedule's crazy. Insane. But thank goodness we have technology.
I know, right? I hope this is still recording, by the way. This is the first time I use this software, so it'll really suck if we stop this and it's not recording.
I think you're still good. It says recording on my end.
I think.
Okay. All right. We have to trust that. It.
How many hours do you work a week?
Oh my goodness.
You never stop working. And by the way, do you consider like the WADs that you do hours that you work?
Yeah. Maybe I should. Yeah, testing. Just fitness testing. I think my schedule, it varies a lot. A lot of that is due to social, and that's one of the pieces that I manage. So specifically with Loud and Live, I'm managing our video team, our photo team, our social media team, and graphic design, and a little bit of website as well. But specific is so intricate and so timely that there's just really a constantly changing pulse that you have to stay up to date on. It's
right.
I mean, you've scrolled through your Instagram feed and it changes. You can go up to the top and refresh it every 3 seconds and it will pop up with totally different information. That's the same for us trying to stay in tune with everything that's happening on that sports side, but now amplified to 5 different events across the world. And
oh my gosh.
So I have 3 coordinators that work with us on the different channels, managing that. And so they're in different time zones. They're working on events that are in different time zones. And so it's kind of a constant, like you're always staying in touch with them. We use Slack a lot to communicate. It's been really helpful and easy to, work remotely. All of these people that are working, you know, social are working remotely with us right now, and they're an excellent team. But I think as far as just hours wise, it varies a whole bunch. Just right. Trying to be available whenever something's happening, because social is one of those things that you could go on do not disturb for an hour, and it could be the 1 hour that everything blows up and you're out of touch. So it's one of the exciting pieces for sure.
All right, guys, it sucks to get bogged down in the editing process while you try to track down the soundtrack for your film. I've been there, so has the team at The Music Bed. In fact, that's the entire reason why they've built their platform. They've made it easier than ever for you to find the song that you're looking for. It's intuitive and easy to use. Browse and search indie artists, bands, and incredible composers like Ryan Tarbert and Chad Lawson. Their roster is growing every day with tens of thousands of songs ranging from cinematic and electric to indie rock and hip hop. And with their single song licenses or subscription, they give you unlimited downloads. There's something for every type of filmmaker. To create your free account and learn more, go to themusicbed.com. You can use my affiliate link in the description notes for this podcast. Plus, as an iFilmmaker listener, they're giving you 1 month of subscription for free or 20% off a single song license. Just enter the promo code iFilmmaker when you check out. Now back to our show. So Wadapalooza has been around for, is this the 8th year or 9th year? I know it's been around for a little bit.
Yeah, this is the 9th year.
So it's the 9th year. And now what you're referring to, like these other games, like the West Coast Classic. Now there's the Mayan Games.
Yeah. So we have Wadapalooza, which will happen in February this year. Typically we're in January, but the Super Bowl's coming to Miami this year. So we're getting kicked a little bit.
Oh, that's not good for you guys.
I think it's an adventure. It just adds an additional element, right? Like it's something you can't plan for.
It doesn't clean, it just makes you better.
Right. I think we're losing our holiday weekend, but you know, we'll
Oh, that sucks.
But we have Wodapalooza, and then we'll head to California. We're doing West Coast Classic. Then we'll have Madrid, Spain. We have the Madrid event in May. Then we have the Granite Games in July and Mayan in June. No, July. Sorry. Granite's in June. Mayan's in July.
And so you're doing all the social media for all that, and you have a team of people that are helping you. How can you give like a vague explanation on how kind of your, I know you said something about you communicating with them in Slack and all that stuff. How did you start kind of wrapping your head around 5 events?
Yeah.
So how did you start, like, when you got the news that, okay, you're in charge of Wodapalooza. Oh, but wait, now there are 4 more events. Make it happen. How did you start making that happen?
I love this question. I'm going to get super nerdy about social media. So we have a super, super cool system for managing the social with all of these events. And so to backtrack a little bit, I think it's really hilarious because when I was an undergrad in college, I graduated in 2009.
Right.
Everybody there, I couldn't wait to get to college to get my email address so I could get a Facebook account. And my professors were like, this is a fad. It's going away. Like, don't get wrapped into this. Don't get excited about social. And there was no social media classes. Like, it was not a thing that you could learn anything about other than on your own and just kind of using it. And so fast forward to today, and I manage 5 properties, and we have so many deliverables, and it's, you know, such a huge, Facebook, it would be, you know, one of the largest countries in the world if it was a country. I mean, that's how many people are on it. So it's just a really, really cool piece of technology that has grown up and grown into more than I think anybody ever expected. And so for us, it's definitely one of my favorite challenges working in this role specifically, but social has been something that's near and dear to my heart my entire career. And There is so much cool stuff that goes into social, and so many, you can use it as a tool, as a toy. It's an amplification of so many things that media people in general touch on. It's a way, you know, for your audience to hear these podcasts, to see the work that you've done. I mean, it's just turned into so much more than a digital yearbook, right?
There's so many careers that have started on social, and I've seen that. It's crazy.
It's so cool. So anyway, that's my nerdy piece a little bit. But we actually use a system called Airtable with the social accounts here. And so what I've done is put together the system using Airtable, which is a super cool tool. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's almost too flexible, but it's a very flexible way to organize information, and it's working really well for us. So with social, not only for us, it's not only a tool to educate and make our audience aware of some of the dates and deadlines that we have going up, and answer questions and communicate with them on that front, but also to provide the brand vibe. And finally, to carry out our partner deliverables. We have several partner deliverables with a lot of the sponsors that we work with, and those come through on social. And we need a way to track those, to show those partners that they received the value in exchange for the money that they paid. Right. We need to track on our own front, we need to track the deliverables and the analytics. And you were actually a big piece of that. We were recently out at the CrossFit Games in Madison, and we did the very first, it was awesome. The very first Spanish broadcast of the CrossFit Games. And I was talking to some of our crew that was from Spain and Mexico that were there, and they said that in their individual countries, only about 2% of the population speak English. So it was super cool and impactful to me to hear that and feel that, you know, we were bringing 98% of the country this sport that they are very interested in their own language for the very first time. But one way that we were able to kind of go back and find the value of that outside of monetarily was to look at the analytics of social. How many impressions were we receiving? What was the engagement rate? How many views happened there? And that was some really, really cool data that we were able to gain through social media and the software that we use. So Airtable is a big piece for scheduling it out. We try to be at least a week or two scheduled out as far as what content we're posting, what's coming up, and then working throughout the entire year. When we work with our partners, they typically get a certain amount of digital, like a social media posts or email campaigns that we need to execute on. And a way for us to track that data and be able to provide that information not only to one, but to, you know, 15 or 20 different people, different businesses, is through this software. And we're able to tag these records so I know the exact date. And then I have our social team make sure that they're copying that link URL into that record in Airtable so that at any point I can go back to a date last year and find out when XYZ company had a post, their third post, and here were the analytics on it. And I can pull all of that information in a number of minutes, whereas previously there hasn't been really a system identified for this, and we saw people just kind of going and scrolling back, you know, years and years and years to try to find the post to then be able to present it and then have to go digging for the numbers on it. It's a way to streamline the process to be able to provide that information more quickly and more efficiently, so it takes me off task less. And I think that's really the key to finding tools that I know you and I have worked together with a captioning software as well. Finding tools that make the entire process more efficient. And for me, Airtable's been a big part of that with social. And IconoSquare is another one that we use a lot with just finding out the impressions versus engagement and reach numbers to be able to provide reports that have that value in it. So it's kind of a cool piece of that.
I love reading analytics, especially on this podcast, on, you know, my website, my social media too. It definitely helps to know what post works, what doesn't, and what times are best to post. And that's the obviously bare minimum of what you can get out of all that stuff. But man, technology is just so advanced.
Well, it's also another, it's an advertising opportunity as well, in a sense. You know, you're able to, you think of, I don't even know how expensive it is, speaking of the Super Bowl, to put a commercial up there these days.
I hear it's like $30 million or something like that for a 30-second commercial. I don't know. I might be way off, but it's a lot.
And you think about if that commercial is just, it's one of the most watched, the Super Bowl is one of the most watched events in America. That commercial is just spray hitting like the most wide variety of people. And then you start looking at social and you can get super detailed with like your audience is mostly from New York and they're 25 to 35 year olds and they speak English and et cetera, et cetera. Like you can find all of these analytics out and then.
I wonder how they get that. Like how do they like the age thing? Like, isn't it by like TV set? That's interesting.
Oh, I don't know. I know Nielsen. I don't know much about their ratings, but I do know that everybody's phone, from what I understand, everyone's phone has your identifier on it as far as your age, your race, your gender, like all of these things, minus your name, right?
Right.
But they collect all that data.
I would get it if, I mean, everybody is streaming the game. Like, I totally get that. Like, maybe they could definitely get information there. But if it's, like, TV sets that are, like, by regular cable, you know?
I don't know.
That'd be interesting to find out.
I think that it would definitely be interesting to find out. I think that it just, social allows you an additional avenue that you're able to target more specifically. And we see that even with YouTube influencers. I know with working with my sister, you know, brands were really looking into doing that instead of Revlon just having a commercial during the Super Bowl and getting a ton of impressions, you're able to put it with somebody like my sister to which is a super saturated audience. That's their entire audience for Revlon sitting right there that's very interested in that product. And I always give the example of, like, if you recommend that I use a painter, a certain friend of yours, and then I see a commercial on TV for a painter, which one do you think that I'm more likely to engage with? Probably the one that my friends and family recommend, because that's something that's coming more personal to me. And so if you look at that through social media, there's a lot of people that are establishing, we've taken away that barrier of the media, you know, and we've provided a direct link between the celebrity, the influencer, the athlete, and the general consumer. And so there's a lot more point-to-point relationships being made, or at least the idea that they are being made. You know, people feel very connected, and we're able to work with a variety of partners to be able to provide that kind of value. But we do that through the analytics and being able to look at that and see how we best work together on projects like that.
I mean, I guess that's why they call them influencers, because they help influence people. But see how I figured that one out.
it's the new thing of 2019. We've gone from social media as a fad to investing marketing dollars in random internet celebrities.
I guess in my world, I mean, if, you know, the new Canon comes out, the new Canon camera comes out, I just hit a very generic Canon commercial on TV, let's say, and you used to see that all the time. I mean, I don't really watch TV anymore. I just watch like Netflix or something. I don't do commercials. I can't anymore. I see things that have no commercials. I know that Canon would put the Rebel, especially the Rebel series, because it's more consumer based, on TV all the time. But that would never entice me to get anything until I see someone that is on YouTube that specializes in doing camera reviews talking about how good that camera is. Then I'd be more inclined to kind of trust that person, you know, than a very generic commercial on that camera. So of course Canon's going to say how good, but it's very important for these influencers to basically make sure they uphold their credibility. Once that goes away, then, you know. Also, speaking of the Super Bowl, I wanted to say earlier that I feel like more people watch the Super Bowl for the commercials these days than like the actual game. Because you never talk about – the next day after the Super Bowl, everyone's talking about the commercials that came out. There's Doritos. There's Budweiser. There's – I think Doritos are always like the funniest ones. And then Budweiser. And then what was it? The monkey baby something.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
It was such a bizarre one. It's like Mountain Dew or something.
I was going to say, I thought it was Mountain Dew.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
Well, you have the fans of two different teams, right? And then everybody else.
The goal of that.
Yeah.
that's more airtime for them, you know?
But then it's getting amplified through social media outside of just that 30 seconds, you know?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, me talking about it now is literally the goal. Like, that's how
we'll link to it in the show notes.
I might just do that. I might just throw a link to that commercial. It's just so bizarre.
It's so funny. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, that's feeding into the whole marketing plan now. It's more than just a one-off commercial. You know, it's how can we take this and amplify it to tell that story outside of just the 30 seconds that we have to really amplify our reach. And we're seeing that a lot. We're seeing a lot of the advertising dollars to go come point at these influencers. And it's interesting.
Yeah. And I bet that definitely entices them to go in that direction more, because you can actually record that stuff. Like, I'm not sure how they can record the sales or the generally the sales that came out of, like, what's their return on investment for putting it on, you know, the Super Bowl. I mean, they know how many people were watching probably, but how many sales did it generate, if any, you know? And I don't know, you know, maybe giving an influencer some sort of affiliate link, you know, that would definitely help, a coupon code, whatever it is. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe a coupon code to the commercial. That just answered my own question, but I don't know.
Well, I think something that people underestimate and don't identify enough is how they're using social or how they're using media in general in their own world. Like you just talked about, I don't really watch TV anymore. I only watch Netflix. I always challenge people to watch how other people use social media. Next time you're on a plane, like put your phone down for 5 seconds and look around and watch how people interact with it. And I think that we have placed a huge value on the engagement numbers because that's what was kind of coming out and being told as being important. Like how many people are liking and commenting on your stuff. It's really showing, you know, an additional level of involvement. But if you actually look around and see how people are interacting with social these days, especially Instagram, for example, we're seeing a lot of people scrolling and consuming the information and then not engaging with it. And they stop and they read it and they see the tags on it. Maybe they click on a hashtag and they're down in a rabbit trail and they never engage with the specific post, but they were absolutely influenced by it and consumed it. And so we're seeing several. We can only classify the numbers on social for people that are engaging with posts. It's very difficult to count the lurkers, the people that are just scrolling and that are consuming that information and then not engaging in it. And so I think that we're seeing a shift in the importance of analytics leaning more towards the impression side of things, which is how many eyeballs were on it, more so than the reach, which is the unique individual people that came across the content.
Okay.
And there's typically, like I said, those numbers, both equally important, but there's been an importance placed on the engagement rates because, again, to get a little nerdy, that's how the algorithms are based on social. Like when you're scrolling through social, people, the algorithms and the AI in there is monitoring how long you're spending on this post versus this one. Did you spend 10 seconds here and 5 seconds here? Did you scroll right past it? Like it's basically monitoring what's causing you to stop and consume it because it also understands that everyone's not engaging with posts. Currently the algorithm, and it is changing a little bit, but it will rank. Originally when it came out, you could choose what you wanted to see in your newsfeed. And being in high school, in early college years, I always wanted to see my friends' relationship statuses because that was the most important. But you can no longer do that. And now it's just learning it for you and learning and making it easier and more addicting to just stay there and stay scrolling. And because it's learning what you want to see. And it does give more priority and more influence to things that you take time to love or be sad about or be angry or whatever the different emotions now are versus just liking it. It considers anything outside of a like ranked higher more strongly, and those things will show up more in your feed. Then it basically says, okay, you really liked this a lot or you were really sad about it. Either way, you had an intense emotion about this specific post. Right. We're going to show you more of this. And so it's constantly about us and constantly growing and changing with that. But I think that a really undervalued piece, and we're still learning what the best way to count this information is those social lurkers, if you will, those people that are not necessarily engaging with any of the information, they're just consuming it. And I challenge you next time you travel to just kind of look around and see how people are consuming information. Because I think that that's the easiest way for us to really identify the next. People always ask, like, what's the next thing? Like, where are we going? And if you just look around and ask yourself how you're consuming media, like I always gave this example at UF, was like, people come in all the time. I would like a 30-minute video. You're like, whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Video.
Right. Like let's not even talk about how shafts that's going to take and how many hours of footage that you have to get to condense it down to 30 minutes. Like that's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I think that people don't necessarily always understand what exactly their return on investment is. And at the same time, how many 30 minute videos do you watch on YouTube? You have to really be interested, right?
I don't remember the last time I watched even a 20 minute video. Yeah.
Because you have to really be invested and interested. Yeah. It's an exchange, right? It's an exchange of time. So you're looking at that saying, is this really something that I want to hand 20 minutes of my time over to, or can I spend that 20 minutes somewhere else?
Yeah.
And that exchange is happening. It's not almost a currency on social these days. And so it's very interesting if you just kind of look around and observe the world around you to see that it's very hard to convince people to even watch a 10 minute video unless it's something that they're incredibly interested in. And so that was a big piece at UF was kind of always to say, what's your goal and how can we get you that product? It may not be what you initially envisioned, but let me help you work towards something so that all of us can be happy. And so to bring us full circle, I think that's really where the multitasking started.
I mean, how hard has it been to convince? Have you had encounters with, I guess, employers or people that, you know, are asking for a certain task or project to kind of convince them that, you know, maybe this is not the best route, you know, and if you had to go that route, how do you approach that?
Yeah, man, that happens more often than I probably realized. Yeah, I mean, I just expect that everyone knows all of this information, right? Like,
everyone's a nerd like you.
It turns out it's not the case. You know, it's really interesting. A lot of times that happens in, like, for the videos of 30 minutes when you really price out minute video, it turns out it's really expensive. And people aren't necessarily ready for that, you know, so it's not something that they included in their budgets. So sometimes that just happens as a constraint of the project. You know, I like to encourage people to start really big and think really big. And then we bring that really big idea into those lines and boundaries that we talked about of the reality of situations. And sometimes that happens naturally just on its own when you start identifying, you know, costs associated with things. You know, that's pretty easy. But I think the easiest way in my experience to work through that with somebody is just to explain the process and to explain your understanding and your recommendations. You know, typically you're brought into a room for your experience and that is seen as valuable. So you're there for a reason. And it's just about breaking it down and reminding yourself, I think, as a creative, that not everybody thinks and understands the exact same way that you do. And so sometimes you have to break down that process so that anybody can understand it. And that goes back to having those communication styles between, you know, working with just another videographer that we're able to talk about, you know, all of our different camera details and our shutter speeds, and then talking with, you know, the accounting department that has no idea what we're talking about. They just want to know how much money it's going to cost. And so just being able to articulate the process in a way that whomever your audience is understands is always helpful in explaining those situations. And then at the end of the day, there's a person in charge that's going to make those decisions based on the information that they have. Your role is to bring them that information so that they can make an informed decision.
That's good. Have you ever dealt with, I guess, bad apples that you've ended up, you know, regretting to work with? And how have you handled situations like that?
Oh, man, you're pulling out all the hard questions. Yeah, I mean, I think you definitely I've had clients in the past. My favorite example is one, they said, it just doesn't feel right. I said, okay, well, what does it need to, it was a video project I was editing. And I said, okay, well, what does it need to feel like? And they were like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. And that's really hard feedback.
Feels. Come on, Emily, give them the feels.
It was a pretty emotional video. Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, it's, in those cases, honestly, you just have to do the best that you can do. Right. And that's all you can do. You know, at some point, like, you get the feedback, you try to articulate it through visual, what, you know, social, whatever the case is, and you do it to the best of your abilities. I don't think any of these creatives, any of us creatives out there, are trying to mess people up on purpose. You know, I think everybody is doing the very best that they can, and that's all you can do. So as long as you're going for it, I think you can only be in control of your own actions, right? So if you feel that you've done this to the best of your ability, I think at the end of the day, that's all you can really ask for.
That's good. And you know what? I love that response. I was actually referring to like people that you've hired for jobs, but I like that though. Those, you know, when it gets tough and you're not getting clarity from, I guess, the people that you work for. But how about the people that you've asked to work for you? How do you deal with that? Like those bad apples, the people that
that's
attitude problems, they're just not showing up, or their work is not good enough. Anything you can think of, how has that gone in the past?
Yeah, no, that's actually a super fun question, because I think so, because I find a lot of, okay, so I don't see that as a bad apple situation. Here's why.
Okay. All right.
I see that as a challenge as a producer to find a place for that person to thrive. It means typically that the place that they're in is not a place that they are set up to excel in. So the more you learn about that person, and the faster you identify that as being a situation that's not working, and them to put them in a place that they do succeed, it really changes the dynamic of the whole piece. I've been really lucky to work with a lot of really great people. And like we kind of, our painter example that we talked about, or the camera example, a lot of the people that I work with are based on word of mouth. And so that's why I think it's really important to always work on that. You know, you never know who's watching, and you never know who your next boss is going to be, or, right, you know, it could be the person you were honking at Whole Foods this morning. You know, you just don't know. And, right, but I really do. I think that that's kind of an exciting piece when that happens, because it's an added challenge where you get to learn something about that person and give them a valuable experience. Typically when you identify that, you know, hopefully you identify it before a project happens, but if it's in the middle of a project, it's really in your best interest to find, you most likely cannot change the circumstances that you're in at that moment. So identifying that issue quickly, and I'm using air quotes, you know, identifying that issue quickly and then being able to find a good space for that, that not project will be successful, but that person will be successful, right, is the, again, goes back to, that's the best you can do with what you have typically. And so as a producer, I find that a challenging, a fun challenge that I'm able to help bring that team together in a better way. And again, you go in with a plan and then you adjust accordingly, however you need to. So it's just one of the other pieces that you work with.
I love that. I love that. That's so awesome that you try to find the best in every situation. I think that people with a shorter, you know, with very little, you know, temper, would probably just, you know, cut the cord and go find some other employee or some other contractor to kind of fill that gap. But that's ultimately try to find the best in every situation. That's really cool. That's really cool. And so I guess last question, what advice would you give anyone that's looking to get into kind of a similar field? A top three, let's say.
Yeah, I think the advice that I would give to somebody looking to get into a field that they're passionate about is just to do something. And I know that that sounds really general, but for me, for example, I'll break it down a little bit more. I was working at UF and I loved what I did. I loved the people that I was working with, but I really wanted to gear more towards sports. And I was working a lot with sports at UF, I wanted more. I was hungry for it. And I ended up finding CrossFit. And I said, I love CrossFit. I love production. How can I blend those two together? And that year I went to regionals in Jacksonville, Florida, and volunteered for 3 days and literally just did something. You know what I mean? Like I found a way, I identified what my passion was, and then I found a way to pursue it. And so I think that no matter where you are, just taking a step in that direction and continuing to make connections, ask questions, and never feel like you know too much to walk into a situation and say, tell me about what you're doing. I want to better understand this, is what really helps propel you, not only in life, but in the career direction that you're looking for. So I think just taking a step is going to get you, you know, one at a time where you need to be.
Wow.
Come on. That was a good stamp on this episode. So good. Is there anything else that you feel like you could have, you want to share or anything like that? Or, cause I'm cutting it short. I feel like I haven't gone in a direction where maybe we could get more information out of you, but I don't know. You shared quite a bit, and I loved it. I barely said anything on this one. I just let you go, and you're on that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm always down to come back. I'm like the Swiss Army media tool. Always awesome. Down.
Where can people find you and I guess the work that you're doing with Loud and Live and whatnot?
Yeah, that's super, super fun. I'm very passionate about everything that we're working on right now. So you can find me personally at Emily Chenery on Instagram. And you can find Loud and Live Sports on Instagram as well. Wadapalooza is where a lot of our work is done, and that's kind of our main piece. And if you visit Loud and Live Sports, you will see all of them. But Wadapalooza has been the one I've been working on the longest. Yeah. So you can definitely see a lot of our bright vibes there.
I know that there's a lot of CrossFit enthusiasts that listen to the show that actually do, because they've messaged me before. They love the whole Wadapalooza. A lot of people have said that they want to come out and kind of shoot and whatnot. But yeah, there's, you know, so that's where you can see all of Emily's stuff. And I'm going to put links to all of that stuff in the show notes for this episode. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.